It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. For much of our country's history, Black Americans have had to forge their own way as they haven't been allowed the same rights and opportunities as white Americans. Quality housing, education, and jobs have been kept from Black people, often with the force of law.
A new book chronicles the history of Black Americans making lives for themselves in American cities in spite of the forces of institutional racism, building their own thriving communities in urban centers around the country, including Milwaukee.
Joe William Trotter is the Giant Eagle University Professor of History, Director of the Center for African American Urban Studies and the Economy at Carnegie Mellon University. His books include Black Milwaukee, The Making of an Industrial Proletariat. His most recent book is Building the Black City, The Transformation of American Life, and he's a graduate of Carthage College in Kenosha. Joe, welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with this concept of the Black City. As I read your book, it's almost a city within a city at so many points in American history. Can you talk a little bit about that concept?
Yes, that is a key point in writing this book, Building the Black City. Over the years, Black urban history has really blossomed into a major field, as you know, and it continues to grow. One of the things that is a major theme in the literature on African-American urban life is this notion of a city within a city. As early as 1945, St. Clair Drake and Horace R. Caton, sociologists and anthropologists, they actually employed the notion of a city within the city, and they pretty much defined it in physical, you know, terms, in geographical terms, as pretty much a segregated space within the larger city, a place that Black people inhabited. So it's kind of a physical, you know, kind of definitional issue that they came to grip with. But of course, St. Clair Drake and Horace R. Caton also understood the city in cultural terms as well. And so they had that large part of the study called Bronzeville, in which they looked deeply into the African-American community and actually talked about churches, fraternal orders, businesses, newspapers, and so on. But the what's driving my notion of a city within the city is that too often, though, we sublimate the Black city within the city to other kinds of understandings of the city. And that is, as you know, this notion of a ghetto was many years a defining feature of the way historians went about talking about the Black urban experience. But even in the absence of using a ghetto, we still tend to look at the Black urban experience through the lens of inequalities and victimization. And I'm thinking about the importance of that today. As you know, as I started to write Building the Black City, the reparations movement really took off across the country and, of course, around the world, a global phenomenon. And when you talk about compensating Black people for past wrongs and the way in which they were deprived of their income, their land, their housing, and were really dispossessed. There's a way in which, you know, Blacks are treated in a kind of victimization approach that really highlights the case for reparation based upon these many, many forms of deprivation. But Building the Black City tries to turn things on its head and to say that we can still make a case for reparations without denying the what we may call the creativity of African Americans within those spaces that were discriminatory. And so Building the Black City tries to revamp and redirect our understanding of Black urban life around this notion that Black people didn't just wait for reparations to take place or for people to rectify past injustices. They went about building a city within the city to address their own needs. And so this book is all about the way Black people harness their resources, meager resources, to build churches, to build businesses, and to really craft a kind of internal social infrastructure, economic infrastructure that was designed to serve the needs of Black residents. And so this particular kind of approach to Black urban history, in a way, goes a little bit against the grain of the, what you might call the material analysis of the Black urban experience, in which you can see gross inequalities between Blacks and whites that was occasioned by class and racial discrimination. So it sort of flipped things over and help us to see that we can make the case for reparations in part on the basis that African-Americans did so much with so little to help themselves, and that we shouldn't discount that and to overplay the notion of deprivation.
And that's reading the book. I really took that away from it. I have definitely heard that the stories of victimization by segregation, economic discrimination, the list goes on and on. And those are all real, of course. What is it, as you went from city to city, and you go through a lot of cities, including Milwaukee, what is it that inspired you to focus so much on that creativity you were just talking about, and the ability of people to build so much in some cases with so little to start with?
Yes, thank you for that question. I was motivated by a number of factors. One of them is this whole idea that Black people build an urban environment. There's a tendency to treat that phenomenon as essentially a product of the Great Migration. You know, that Black people during the late 19th, early 20th century finally broke out of the rural South and moved increasingly into the urban environments within the South and across the nation, the North, West, and South. And so in some ways, the way we've understood even the Black city in victimization terms has been to sort of centralize our understanding of Black urban life in this Great Migration era. Now, over the past several decades, we have gone a long ways towards showing that there was a significant Black urban presence in American cities from the colonial period through the early 21st century. And so in writing this book, I wanted to make sure that we connect the story of 20th century urban Blacks backward to the story of transatlantic slave era Blacks. And so that we can begin to see that Blacks, urbanites, were there from the beginning.
Well, we're here in Wisconsin, so if I may, I'd like to zoom in on the part of your book that deals with the Midwest. And if you could pick up with one of those eras you mentioned, when we saw this migration to cities across the Midwest, and you spend a lot of time in a whole other book actually looking at Milwaukee. Can you set the stage for us there?
Yeah, much of my conceptualization of the Black urban experience, as some of you know, was built initially on the way I was able to talk about the history of Black Milwaukee as a case study. And over the years, I've used Milwaukee as a kind of sounding board and comparative vantage point to talk about other places within the Midwest, but also in the Northeast, the South, and the West. And the Midwest, in many ways, is unique in the context of the way Black people built cities. And one of the themes of the book that runs straight throughout the book is that we need to think about the Black city building process in all of its complexity, that it was not a simple process, that it was a process that varied significantly over time, but also from place to place. The Black city building process in the Midwest was a latecomer. In the Northeast, Black cities had their origins in the colonial period, along with the time frame of New Orleans, Charleston, Baltimore, and so on. And so in the Northeast, you see African-American developing a Black city, what I call a Black city during the colonial period. New York City, from the beginning, even under the Dutch, Black people had started to gain access to land. And so the city building process has always been a process of a settlement, getting a foothold, and then suffering some form of displacement and having to move to another locale, situate themselves in a different space, and then replicate that city infrastructure that they were able to build in previous locations. And in the Midwest, Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, all of these cities had their experience with establishing themselves in a locale early on and then moving to other places within the city to reestablish themselves. Because the East Side in Milwaukee was initially a location of a small Black settlement in the city, but the West Side gradually emerged, and especially on the impact of the Great Migration. And then you have Black people moving into that area and of Milwaukee.
We're talking to Carnegie Mellon history professor Joe William Trotter about his latest book, Building the Black City, The Transformation of American Life. I want to ask about business communities that came up in Black communities in Milwaukee and elsewhere in the Midwest. In some ways, a parallel economy to the wider city. Can you talk about the importance of that?
My argument is that we have treated Black urbanites in a way as, you know, they are inhabitants of the city, but they are exploited inhabitants. And so the emphasis for the most part has been placed on the way they were segregated, exploited, and mistreated. And so that has put a damper on us understanding that, yes, that story is a centerpiece of the Black urban experience, but it is not the only piece. That process tend to overshadow the way in which Black people themselves saw themselves as actors in gaining access to land and also housing that they could use to actually build institutions in those areas. And so the notion of Black people as city builders ask us to look at strategies that Black people employed to stay in the city, for one thing. One of the parts of this study is that the city was not all that hospitable to Black people. So at one level, Black people were in many ways victims of efforts to remove them from the city, you know, to displace them from the city. So they had to fight for a place in the city, and they were able to do this by finding ways to rent property. Early on, they were able to rent property, and early on, some of them were able to find ways to buy property and then move on to chart the ways that they use their tenuous foothold in the housing structure of the city as renters and to some extent as owners. They begin to collaborate with each other to build their first churches, to build their first fraternal orders, to build their first barbershops and beauty shops. And we often underplay the degree to which African Americans are affecting the built environment of American cities through their own activities of building an infrastructure to serve their needs. And so this book is trying to revamp our whole way of thinking about the way Black people inhabit cities, the way they behave in cities, the way they build in cities. And so my whole point is that Black people were not just ghetto dwellers or occupants of the lowest housing cost market in the city. They were also truly city builders.
Something else that struck me is your talk about the political activism in these Midwestern cities. I think a lot of times in the United States, if you say civil rights movement, we think of the 1950s and 60s. Well, hang on. You're talking about people being very active on things like housing, access to public services, and a lot more. For example, in the post-World War I era in Milwaukee and Detroit and other Midwestern cities.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And the argument here and what I try to document in every city that I look at in this book is that Black people did not just build the city to occupy as housing and to go about their everyday lives, you know, pretty content to do that. They actually use this infrastructure to mobilize politically. And so Black churches were not just religious institutions, they were political institutions. Fraternal orders were not just, you know, organizations for friendly camaraderie between Blacks. It was also a political organization. And almost all of these institutions, including businesses, barbershops, beauty shops, played a role in all of the mobilizations that Black people developed. In every city across the country that I looked at, Black people did this against the odds. They faced tremendous pressure to give up on the city. And there were race riots in the 19th century and the 20th century. In some cases, Black people faced some physical violence in Milwaukee. They faced physical violence in Atlanta, riot of 1906, a terrible riot that destroyed thousands of dollars worth of property, schools, and homes in the city. And in Cincinnati, one of the most significant outbreaks of racial violence of Black people took place. And in each case, some Black people migrated to other places, but other Black people stayed and undertook the difficult task of rebuilding, you know, their communities. And this is what I call the dynamic of the Black city building process that is very complicated. It was not easy. It was always done against the odds, but they did it. And we just haven't, I think, given them enough credit.
And we'll leave it there. Joe, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Joe William Trotter is a professor of history and director of the Center for African American Urban Studies and the Economy at Carnegie Mellon University. He's a graduate of Carthage College in Kenosha. He talked to us about his new book. It's called Building the Black City, The Transformation of American Life.
Join us Monday for a celebration of the life and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. by tuning in to Wisconsin Public Radio's broadcast of Wisconsin's 45th annual tribute and ceremony from the Capitol Rotunda. The tribute is Wisconsin's official state ceremony and the oldest official MLK state celebration in the U.S.
The theme of this year's program is Justice Lives Here. The program is produced and hosted by Jonathan Overby, executive producer and host of The Road to Higher Ground.
The event in the State Capitol Rotunda is free and open to the public. It will be broadcast live at noon, January 20th, on WPR music stations in Wisconsin, on WPR.org and the WPR app. You can also find it rebroadcast at 8 p.m. on January 20th on WPR news stations.